This episode of Musicians Map is brought to you by Mordecai Records in Hamilton, New Zealand. They offer professional recording, mixing, and mastering for local and online clients. Check out Mordecai Records at facebook.com/Mordecai Records and mordecairecords.co.nz. Or check the episode description for links.
Hello and welcome to the Musicians Map podcast. I'm Kane Power. This week is the first iteration of what will hopefully become a regular set of episodes dedicated to making money as a musician. Money Talk. Money Talks will feature candid interviews and discussions with musicians doing the one thing that seems to elude so many of us: making money from making music. Today, we're delving into the world of covers gigs. This is everything you need to know about playing popular songs in exchange for a fee. How to get started, how to book gigs and keep booking gigs, how to set your fee, and how to turn your passion into a career. Covers can be a great source of income for professional musicians, and many people make a comfortable living from playing them exclusively. Not only do they provide income, but covers gigs can provide a platform with which to gain exposure, build confidence, and become a master of your instrument. And for a new musician, the audience at covers gigs are often the most receptive and appreciative audience you'll perform to. To discuss this topic, I have two very special guests this week. Both are New Zealand artists who have been successfully making a living from music for over a decade. Nicola Thompson and Simon Hurst.
Simon, Nicola, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kane.
Let's start with some background. Your background in music, a little bit of your experience in covers.
Sure. Okay. So I am in a covers band called The Munros, and I've been in that band. The band's been around for a long time, so I joined the band maybe 10 years ago now. And band's been around for a long time. The band is like a kind of a show band doing a lot of the corporate scenes. So we kind of have a real focus on entertainment and colour and sparkles and, I guess, dancing in a way. Not so much dancing, but it's a bit of a visual.
It's a show.
You could kind of sit down and watch, I guess, in a way. So yeah, I've been involved in that for a while. Before that, I studied at Wintec, did the music degree there. And through that degree, I guess mostly I met a bunch of people in the industry. And through the people that I met, that's, I guess, how I got involved with the band. And that's kind of where my life carried on from then on, just progressed. And I stayed in, it's kind of the first band I've been in, really. The first band I joined, I kind of stayed in up till now. So that's kind of lucky in a way. I haven't really...
It shows that you guys have done well.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of lucky because I guess I haven't had to do that where you get together with some friends and you start out and you have to do all those gigs for free just to get yourself out there. I guess I've kind of skipped that step in a way, which is quite
so
nice.
You sing for them?
Yes, I'm the singer. Sorry.
Do you play other stuff?
I do some basic keyboards sometimes if we have a bigger show that might include that. But generally, we are a 4 or 5 piece and I just sing.
Yeah. Well, you've done the guitar, eh?
Oh, yeah, I've done the keys.
I see, you've got to claim that.
Actually, Brad keeps trying to bring it back in. Brad's our...
that needs to happen.
Drummer, my husband, and also like the musical kind of guy behind the band, and he's always like loves adding more things that make us look more... that can add more music stuff. So, yeah, he's just bought a new one of these things at the moment, which is just impossible to play. But, yeah, he always wants to bring that back. It's always just adds an extra thing. But I kind of like focusing on singing. I think as soon as I'm doing something else, like even when I'm doing the guitar, I find myself looking at what I'm playing, and it's actually better. I love to perform, so I love to have a wireless microphone, be able to move about the stage, get out into the crowd, and I think an instrument can hold you back a little bit. Well, for me, it holds me back a bit, so I like to be free. So... my strongest position is just me and the microphone, really.
And what sort of gigs do you mainly do?
We'll do a lot of mostly corporate stuff and mostly private. So we would play kind of Auckland, Rotorua, Hamilton, Tauranga would be our biggest areas, and usually corporate functions. So whether that's Christmas parties or conferences, and the occasional we might do a 40th or 60th and some school balls, I guess. and the odd pub, but not really as much. It's not really as much as our focus. Mm. More of the corporate private stuff. Yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Simon.
Hello, my name's Simon Hurst. I don't really know. I met both of you when we were studying a long time ago, as we've established. I'm a singer, play the guitar and sort of dabble in a few other things, and started playing covers. I think it was pretty much when we were studying, because we all needed money.
Mm.
And I sort of got offered through another one of the guys there, their singer was leaving. And he approached me, and I think it was probably in like third year. And yeah, that was kind of it really. It kind of kicked on from that. That went for a few years, and then that band sort of dissolved. And I did a few different jobs for, you know, a handful of years, and then kind of got back into more playing solo when I was probably about 20 or 21 or something. And then, yeah, just kind of carried on since then.
And what are the main sort of gigs that you do?
Generally bars. I've done more weddings than you could ever remember, but... but we're not really doing too much of that now. And it's just, yeah, generally, basically just bars now. Not done too much corporate stuff like you guys have. Mm. Just a few kind of bits and pieces, but...
And so you do solo stuff and band stuff as well?
Yeah, yeah. It's predominantly solo at the moment, but I guess if the bar kind of comes and goes, oh, can you put a band together for whatever, it's going to be a big night, then we kind of just piece something together and...
Cool.
Yeah.
So do you have a specific band, or you kind of just have a bunch of musos around you that you might pull in?
A little bit of both, I think.
So if you were a band, would you be Simon Hurst and Friends?
That's funny, because there's no name, which always kind of gets people, because they go, oh, what's the name of your band? Okay, we don't have one.
We're just the band.
Yeah.
Simon Hurst and Friends.
Yeah.
It's quite nice.
It's terrible. There's a few people. It's usually like a 3 or 4 piece, and there's probably about 6 musicians or 7 musicians within that group, and it'll be the same kind of result.
Mm.
Yep.
No matter
who's playing. You guys know your repertoire, and you know.
You know, like at some point, it's been a solid band with those members for, you know, a few years, and then that's changed, and it's the next people. So you kind of, all on the same page.
Mm.
Generally, there's usually.
That's quite good.
The occasional kind of train wreck, but.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Brilliant. I'm a drummer. I got into covers when I was, I think when I was late 16 or 17. Some friends of friends were putting together a band and needed a drummer. And for some reason they chose me, which was a terrible choice because I was an awful drummer. But through the band I became quite a decent drummer. Mm. Over the years, and we mainly did hard and soft rock covers in pubs. Mm. And we did lots of 21sts and birthdays and things like that, mainly around Central North Island. Mm. Did it for 3 years, so not a whole lot, but after that I actually toured with a few covers bands as an engineer.
Mm.
And I also worked in hospitality for the entire time that we were studying. And so I saw covers bands almost every single night at weddings and functions.
Great way to pick things up, eh?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, but I gave that up when the band broke up years and years ago. And since then I haven't done anything. Hence why I have 2 experts. Today. You guys are totally experts in this field.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
So what about, let's keep going this way.
Mm-hmm.
What about the fondest memory, or maybe your best gig? A little bit of a story maybe. What's the best gig that sticks out in your mind?
I think for me, I always enjoy the gigs that we travel. I like kind of going on adventures, and we we don't do it that often, obviously, because it's just a big mission, and obviously people don't always want to pay the extra amount for getting people overseas. But we did a gig in India a couple years back.
Wow,
and,
really?
Yeah, that was epic. So that was it was like an English-speaking school, and they were having their jubilee or something, so they wanted an English band that was going to play English, kind of your normal song, like what we would consider our staple kind of songs.
Mm.
Yes, they flew us over there. It was really cool. I mean, with the money that got us over there, we ended up staying on for the week, and so I think by the time everything was paid for, we kind of came back with nothing. But that was not, like, the point was we'd kind of had a trip to India
back.
And it had kind of cost us nothing. So it was really cool, other than everyone getting quite sick and
classic.
Having to have a toilet close by on the stage. That was really cool, because it was actually like a theatre, and people kind of, it was a ticketed event, people paid money to come sit down and watch, and that was really cool. I've enjoyed doing that, and we've done shows in the past. We did the Katy Perry tribute show, and that was also really cool because it's a theatre show. People sit down and you have their undivided attention, and that's really cool. I always like the big shows, you know, with lots of people. And
Yeah,
that's probably my favourite.
That's a pretty hard one to top. Yeah.
Have you been to India? No. Been to a few of the islands.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a bit of a...
Probably some nice places.
A paid holiday.
Yeah, exactly,
Cook Islands. I don't know. Anything where the crowd is kind of interacting, to me, is... kind of almost regardless of size, I guess, to a point when it's big, it's if they're all interacting and it's kind of one thing, then the gig sort of takes off. And then
if you have a really big crowd that are all really into it, can almost be too easy in a way. It like doesn't really matter what you play or what you do, they're just gonna love it, and that's not always the greatest either. Sometimes it's nice to win a crowd over and
get
them started,
a bit of a battle.
And I agree with that too.
Yeah, it's things like those are cool. The gig we did with the British and Irish Lions came and toured the rugby teams a few months ago.
Oh, that'd been cool.
Yeah, that was just great, because they sort of know how to have a good party.
Mm. Yeah.
And unlike us more reserved Kiwis, they kind of don't mind getting pretty passionately stuck into whatever you're kind of singing, you know.
Yep.
So
that's cool.
That was a pretty great gig. It's probably one of the best bar gigs I think I've ever done, because they just all went nuts, and I love lots of British music, so you know, it was just a good match. The stars aligned. I knew lots of the songs that they liked, and they reciprocated, and it was a good gig.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
My best one, I think, in covers. We did a New Year's gig in Tairua. I don't remember what year it was. I'd probably be embarrassed to say. But it's the same thing. We had a pub full of people, but not even a big pub. It might have been 100 people. And
they were just having a good time.
It was just everyone was, you know, arm in arm up the front, singing along to every word. And it's that whole, what you said, like winning them over. You start out quiet, as you always do. Yeah. And then, you know, you see people at the back of the room, and it slowly fills up, and then people get a bit loose, and... you know, you win them over.
You kind of
and
enjoy the challenge, eh?
Yeah, but,
kind of getting them to
but then you start to feel their energy, and then you start to put more energy in, and they feel that. And it's like this endless energy loop that just kind of,
reaches
its climax at New Year's Eve. Yeah. It was brilliant.
It's an interesting thing, eh? Because I've always been quite fascinated how if you have a great gig and someone will come up and go, oh, you guys were great. And then having, like, sort of explaining, you kind of go, when the crowd's that into it, it's... for me, I don't know, like maybe it's because it's just a different point of view, like you're the performer in there, you know, the audience. But at that point, to me, it's the crowd kind of dragging me along.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, like it's a funny dynamic.
Yeah, totally.
Like they sort of see it as, oh, these guys are incredible.
Yeah.
And you're like, you guys.
And you're kind of going, well, I'm just kind of responding to how you guys are going. You know, like it becomes, like you say, like it becomes a bit of a loop. And I always find that really interesting.
So have you ever started a gig in maybe in a bad mood or something and gone, oh, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be a rubbish gig, and then being dragged up by the audience?
Yeah, totally. I think likewise, you can start them in a really good mood, and sometimes it doesn't, you know, the stars don't align, and you know, like it can go the other way. But
I guess for you though, Simon, with pubs, you might have a different thing in the sense that your audience in a way could be changing. People could be coming in and going throughout the night. Whereas I think for us, when we have an event, specifically event, people have come in, closed the doors, and they're there right from start. You kind of have, in a way, it's quite nice because you do get the opportunity to work with them, I guess, work them all the way through. And that's kind of a nice challenge sometimes if people, if it's a small crowd and maybe the room's not quite set out right, or you sometimes are in a separate room to them and they expect them to come over, all these kind of challenges that you could have. It's quite cool to have that challenge of like, right, we need to really bring these people out. So what are we going to do to really grab their attention and bring them through? That's quite cool. But
yeah,
we kind of have that at an event because, you know, they're staying all night generally until, you know, you've got one set of crowd, whereas your people are kind of changing through. In a way, it's going to be different.
I think specifically in certain bars that aren't possibly seen as like a destination bar, like an all-night kind of, we're going to go to this place all night.
Stay there all night.
And
stay
there. Mm. If you're playing in one of the other ones where people kind of stop in for a while, those gigs are pretty tough because you kind of, because I like the banter with people, and I like to be able to like have a bit of a talk and a bit of a laugh, but when it changes so constantly, you can't really build up a rapport because those people are gone and then the new ones coming. So those ones can be a bit interesting.
Ruth has been going out a couple of times in Hamilton with her sisters, you know, doing catch-up party times and birthdays and stuff. And she's been going to, is it the house bar, home bar? Or
House bar.
Bar?
House bar, then home bar, now house bar.
Is it?
Yeah, it's changed.
Okay.
It's had a bit of
I've never been, but it used to be the Loaded Hog, right? She's been going there, and they go specifically because there's a band that plays there. Really good. Must be the Monroes. But she said they go there, and as you said, they stay there all night. And she's commented on every occasion, I think, about how the band recognised them. And,
oh, that's cool.
And kind of give them a bit of a shout out during the gig, and it makes them, you know, feel really good.
Yeah.
And it makes them kind of bond with the band a bit more.
Yeah, totally.
And stay there and dance all night.
Well, I think that's the whole purpose. The music, I've always kind of focused or had the opinion that the music's almost secondary to that.
Because
I think the main thing you're really trying to do in a covers sense, I even think the same thing with originals too, but that's a different thing. You're trying to create like a rapport and a connection with people. That's the bottom line, because if you've got that, then they'll come back because exactly that, like you made them feel good and like you were stoked they were there. And so I've always seen that as, to me, that's the bottom line of playing, especially in bars, because they're paying you to get people there, repeatedly, you know, and keep them there. So I think forming that connection is an immensely important part. It's sometimes kind of overlooked, not deliberately kind of overlooked, but maybe just not quite realised.
Because it's not as obvious, right? It's like, I'm a covers band, I need to focus on the music.
Because that's what you are, you're a band. But I think sometimes often gets overlooked that you're trying to create a sort of rapport with people.
Connect with people, as you kind of just said, that is intrinsic to music, isn't it? And that's kind of the point.
Of
writing music or performing music in any way, make people feel a certain way. Okay, well let's go back and figure out how, for people that don't know, how do covers gigs work? As in, what's the sort of process when you book a covers gig? What do you do? Like, what happens?
Yeah, well, I guess if you're booking a pub or versus, say, a private event, it could be different. I mean, for us, if we have different corporates and things, it's always a different venue and a different, different environment. So, we kind of, I guess we have a similar formula that we would always use. We kind of know what we'd start out with song-wise and that kind of thing.
Mm.
But, I don't know.
are you required to play a certain amount of time? Are there different sort of
gigs like that? Generally with corporates, you might, if they've got a bunch of things like a conference, they might have a whole lot of things in their schedule, and then you'll get very certain time. So sometimes a corporate, they'll be like, band on 10:20, off at 10:50, then so-and-so speaks, you know, and you kind of get your run sheet and you just follow that.
Mm.
But if we're doing, say, more of like a 40th, then they might just say, oh, from 8 o'clock onwards can the band play. In that case, you'll just follow a similar formula that you maybe would at a pub. Mm. You just do your set hours. We normally would do 3 hours generally for a, that's on our contract, other than pubs, on our contract we would do the 3-hour night. We kind of feel like that works really well. It's kind of strong enough to get the band to do their thing, but also leave people some time to mill around and talk. Sometimes at events they just think, oh, people arrive at 7:30, band on at 8, and then what you find is people actually just want to have a bit of chill time.
They don't arrive till 5 to 8 anyway.
Yeah. And the people want to talk.
Can the band shut up for half an hour?
Totally. So we try to kind of get the balance. We try to talk to our clients about that and say, let's get the balance right, even though they don't always take that advice. At the end of the day, you do what they say because they're paying you. But but otherwise, general formula is basically the same, I guess.
We've talked about pubs, obviously. What are some other types of venues? What sort of venues do you play other than bars? Any kind of charity gigs or like local events or anything like that? Does that come into it?
Yeah, I guess that can be anything. Charity stuff, it could be wherever. Mm-hmm. From a theatre to, like a small business or, that just is entirely changeable, I guess. Big events like the balloons ones and all that stuff is at the uni and
the high balloons. You'd get given specific times too, because you're kind of one with balloons, you're kind of one of a few different bands, you might not play that long really. I think we only played an hour and a half and that was just our thing, and we've done the cycle, I forget what is the cycle challenge that they do in Taupo, and that's like a couple of hours like in the middle of the day, which is always unusual for us. It's like, we're used to kind of having a wine and it's being dark of get your Dutch courage, but the middle of the day it's a bit of a different, there's like kids dancing, it's a bit of a different thing, but that's quite cool too, different kind of vibe.
And what sort of clients are booking predominantly? What sort of clients are kind of your regulars?
Well, mine are generally bars. And it has been for a long time now. We did weddings for a number of years, but we sort of pretty much kind of knocked that on the head a little bit a few years ago, just because everyone's pretty busy. Mine's generally bars for the most part. I mean, any charity stuff that I can help out with, which I sort of do as many as I can. For me, it's generally in bars and residencies kind of work, where they'll kind of say, I guess we like what you do. Do you want to do, these nights on a regular basis? And then it's just left. It's almost become basically a job.
Yeah.
Kind of like hour-wise then.
Regular, kind of. Which is what's cool about what you do, because you kind of can predict your calendar probably a bit more than
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally. Weddings definitely are still booking bands. I don't know as much as they used to, probably because things are getting so expensive these days. It's probably hard to then do that. A lot of people are like, oh, well, do I need a band? And they think that they don't, which is a mistake in my opinion. But I always think a band can really transform a night, in a way it seems, when you've already forked out so much money and everything's so important to pay for a band, I don't know. But, we still get weddings. We used to do a lot more school balls, which I think we're doing less of, because I think that's that dance music coming through. They all want to hear a lot of the, and which we try to even cover as a band. We try to do a lot of dance music at school balls, but there's only so much of that you can do. They kind of want to hear the DJ a little bit, so we're doing less school balls, but still doing corporates. I'd say they're still there. Still corporates and still private functions. Everyone occasionally has a 60th, and them and their friends will get together and put some money together, and they'll still have a band.
I love those ones.
Yeah.
It's definitely the best, I think. When everyone's in it to have a whole lot of fun. So how do people actually book you? Where do you have like a site and they find you online? Is it word of mouth?
I think it's all of the above. I think a lot of it's just seeing you play.
Yeah.
I think that's probably that'd be the biggest one. And then,
so it's like guests of your previous clients.
Yeah, or they just come up to you when you're at the bar, mid-song generally, just because it's a practical time.
Yeah.
Hey,
right, come over here.
Right,
hey, do you?
Yeah, right before the pinnacle chorus.
Yelling in your ear.
Yeah, they come up and start shouting, can I get your phone number?
You don't know if they're going to request Wagon Wheel or try to book another gig for you. Yeah.
I think that would be the biggest way, but then it's usually through email, just through the site. Phones or whatever, but
and you've got a site
set up for that. For sure.
Is it different to your original site?
Nah, it's not. I just kind of use that. I mean, but I guess the thing is now, because I'm not doing so many private functions, it doesn't happen so much for private functions now, because it's sort of been a little bit by design over the last couple of years to sort of narrow down. I guess because you get known for doing a certain thing, and, you know, probably in Hamilton, I'm probably fairly well known for doing covers, you know, so I wanted to start, because trying to do the original music, it starts getting quite confusing, because people go, well, what are you playing at this gig? Like, is it going to be covers or originals, or is it going to be kind of both or what? So I started trying to kind of like limit a little bit where I was playing covers. So generally now, if people want to hear me play covers, they'll come to this bar.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they'll hear.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll come up and ask for originals too, which is always really nice. And then kind of anything outside of that now, people seem to kind of go, oh, right, that'll be an originals gig because it's not there.
So that's a good argument for starting your starting your fan base in one area.
Yeah, immensely. Yeah, totally. That was pretty much the whole reason I started. Well, I just stole it off the Beatles. Really, because I kind of just went, okay, you know, like they, it was the same, it's such an age old thing now. People get so worked up about playing covers and covers versus originals and things. And I think they're so similar, bar what you're actually playing. I've always viewed them as being such similar things. And I think people view them very differently. And I kind of went, you know, like if you're going to get, you're getting paid to get better as a musician.
Yeah.
You know, because you're constantly going to be playing. You're getting paid to play in front of people who are going to, you know, hopefully, who hopefully enjoy your music, and then you might create a relationship with them. And then generally if you do that, then they become interested in what you write, you know. So it's it was the complete thing, you know, like, I just thought, you know, how else can I do it? I'm not good at anything else, to be honest. You know, like, so it's kind of like, well, how do I make this work? And I thought, well, the Beatles did it. They started playing covers, and then they started eventually writing their things, and they had kind of a fan base that started with that and then kind of continued through and then obviously went nuts. And I don't know, man, if it's good enough for the Beatles, it's certainly good enough for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good enough for a lot of bands, and it goes back to what you're saying about making the connection.
Yeah.
You know, you're making a connection with these people, often on a personal level.
Yeah.
And gaining them as fans, even through playing covers, because you're playing the music that they connect with.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're going to start to follow you.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating thing how, you know, how it works like that. And you get to know lots of them and, you know, what they like. And, yeah, just the fact that a lot of them now will come and ask me to play my songs is always a very, it's quite a humbling kind of thing. But, you know, you kind of, at the same time, there's a little bit of satisfaction because I went, oh, that's cool. Even though, because it's a very small scale, not really many people know my original music at all. But, you know, like at this point, it has actually worked to some effect. And, you know, like that's a little bit satisfying, which is quite cool.
You know, you're forming that relationship. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Is that important, do you think, to repeat bookings, obviously?
What's that, the relationship?
Yeah. Yeah, forming those relationships. Is that where you get most of your repeat bookings?
Well, for us, we're kind of touching on two different points there, but I want to go back to that covers thing. But with the bookings thing, like of course, as a band, we sit down and have meetings and go, okay, we need to fill the dryer, we need to get more gigs. And so we try different things. It's like we try pushing the website, we do new promo videos, we do a bunch of different things. I mean, we've even, you know, tried to get technical with our Google AdWords and all of that stuff. And to be very honest, it hasn't made a lot of difference. The only way we get work is when people have seen us. So we, like for us, we have to consider every gig as promotion, you know? And I understand it too. I don't think I would book a band out of the blue that I've never seen. Not for my wedding, not for something so important. I would want to see them first. I mean, I'd trust a promo video maybe, but I know that you could edit promo videos, you know? So I would want to, I trust my friend if they've seen them, or I'd need to see them with my own eyes. And for us, that's the only way we get work. It's just repeat bookings, you know. And so we have to consider every gig. Even if we're in a gig, we're like, oh, this gig, you know, we're not that into this gig or whatever. You never know who's watching. So you always have to keep your guard up, because this is the only way we'll get gigs, you know. And we found it I took a bit of time off when I had my head was pregnant, had my boy a little while ago, and we kind of said no to a few gigs, and we really noticed it drop down, you know, because gigs produce gigs. And so when you start saying no, you start losing that repeat work, you know. And so we need to kind of keep filling the diary to get that. Yeah, we get the work from the work, really. We just got to keep doing it, and it keeps coming.
That is great advice as
well. It's the only way, you know. It's like we kind of, it's different to something else where it, you know, a different industry, it might be important to have good advertising or put an ad in the newspaper or whatever it might be, but I think for a band, not so much. I think people just need to see you.
When it comes down to it, it's personal experience and...
Yeah, or hear about you, you know. Yeah. We've had a few people who do a gig and someone will say, oh, I heard about you from so-and-so, and then someone else said they saw you there. And like when you kind of, when you have exposure and you're around the place and people are talking about you, then they're going to trust you and book you, you know.
Yeah.
That's the only way for us, we've found, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like you said, like the gigs thing, when I first started playing solo, I said yes to like every gig I could get. And I was doing, I think the most I did was about 240 gigs in a year.
Wow.
That's
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, but you know, like over, the, and in the long term, it gets to the point where, like you say, the gigs get you gigs where I went out and looked for the gigs to start with, and then I just said yes to, yeah, just like I say, pretty much everything, but... if I really couldn't do something. And then, you know, you do that for long enough, and if you build a bit of a name for yourself, the gigs start coming to you, you know, and that's a cool, you know, it's one less thing to do in a busy world. And yeah,
they do. It's hard to do marketing and put yourself out there. They come to you. I agree.
It's the best kind of marketing. Cause I think in this day and age too, cause the internet's so important, but at the same time, you can be made to look pretty amazing on the internet.
It's not always truthful.
And it becomes, you know, people are very clever with that stuff, so you can't really fake it if you're at the gig. So if you're good, then you're good.
You can fake it until that point.
I mean, you can have the best photos in the world.
Talk yourself out.
You get there if you can't play.
That's it, man. That's the bottom line, eh? That's dead right, Nikki.
240 gigs a year.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, I think that was, I think that was the most. I think generally it was about, let's give a little while ago now. I think it was generally about 220 something.
Oh, is that a?
Well, you know, I think
there's so many gigs still, man. So many gigs.
Yeah,
it's amazing. But I mean, that was just that. I sort of went, in for a penny, in for a pound. And that was, I wanted to make it a job.
Yeah.
I think, you know, hard workers. Is often talked about, not always kind of followed through with in such situations. And I don't know, you know, like everyone's different. I guess that maybe was my thing, and I just went, okay, cool.
You want it to be your full time work, so you can't make it. So, yeah, some people work 40 hours a week, you know?
Totally.
Putting your time into it.
So, how did you guys turn it from that? I know you kind of went into it when you already had a group that was. Being quite successful, but how did they do it and how did you do it? How did you turn it from taking every gig possible into something that actually is your job? Like, at what point did you kind of start going, you know what?
Being choosy,
I'm worth this much money and this is what you will pay me. Or is it, how does it work?
I don't know, Nikki.
Well, because I mean, our band's been through our ups and downs as well. You know, there were times when we were busy and then times when we weren't so busy, and then you kind of have to start taking in more gigs then. And I think you get to a point, if you've got enough gigs coming in that are paying well, then you can afford to be a bit choosy. I would say we probably are a bit like that now. We're a bit more choosy. We wouldn't take, we've all got kind of families and things as well, but we kind of tend to put a premium price on it and then take the gigs. But yeah, not always, you know. There's a time when after I had the baby, it's like, okay, well, now we need to start saying yes more often, you know, and you kind of build it back up. So I think, when you get to the point that you figure out how much work you want, I guess, you know, it's like, well, we want to be gigging once a week. That's good enough for us. Or do we want more? Do we want less? And we often get together as a band and just talk about it. Is everyone happy with the amount of work? Is it too much? Is it too little? Do we want to work more? I mean, we find it quite tiring too, you know, so we wouldn't want to do it three nights a week. We've all agreed that's too much for us, you know, for what we do. We like it once a week. It kind of keeps I mean, generally for us, we probably gig once or twice a week, depending. I mean, busy seasons, it could be 2 to 3 a week, and then sometimes it could be once every second week, depending on when it's low season or high season. But we've all decided that works for us. We're happy with that amount, I guess. Mm. And when it starts to dip off, then we might pick it up a bit more and work harder at some other things. And for us, that's when we generally do a pub gig, because that's where we find we get our most exposure too, you know. So
I guess there's a big thing, the big difference there is too that you're in a band. So that's just a whole other ballpark to doing it solo, because
you've got to consider other people.
What I can and cannot do is just down to me.
Just to you.
And what I can, you know, fit in or fit around family. I think family has a massive bearing on it anyway. But yeah, I think so. It's always tougher, you know, having done and still doing the band stuff. It is a lot harder in that way, because bands are like a four-way marriage.
Yeah.
You know, trying to keep that many people happy all the time can be pretty hard work.
So. Yeah, and then you've got three other guys, and they're all trying to keep their wives happy too, who are saying, hey, we haven't had a weekend together in ages, you know, so that's always quite hard too. So, and then we're like, well, we need to do this gig, so it's quite hard.
What about, especially for you, Simon, because you played quite a varied range, how do you decide on what to charge, like, obviously you would charge more for a full band than you would for, you know, a solo acoustic gig. Do you kind of go off what other people are charging, or does the client kind of make the offer, or do you sort of set a fee?
It's generally down, I guess, to me, for the most part, I guess, because for lack of a better word, the band leader is such a dumb thing, but you know, like, I guess because it's generally under my name, because it's solo a lot of the time, it kind of, the band is kind of just kind of sort of comes under that. But if they want a band, they say, can you sort that out? And I go, yeah, okay, cool. I don't know. So it's sort of, we sort of approach it different ways. As I say, now being in residencies, it doesn't tend to change as much, because I'm not playing as many other places. But in the past, if other bars approached me, depending on what the bar was and the venue, like, I try and be a little bit flexible, because, you know, the residency I have is at a bar that's doing really well.
Yeah.
And I realise that a smaller bar or you know, like a cafe kind of / bar, they're just not going to have that kind of money. So
you try to figure out what they can afford, really.
Yeah, totally. But then you have to be careful too, because then, you know, like, sadly, the bottom line comes down, you still need enough money to support your family.
Yeah.
So you've got to be a little bit careful, because you can't drop your price too much, because then you're kind of basically just purposely losing money, because you could have got that gig. And yeah, so it's a little bit of a hard one.
Yeah, especially sometimes, if it's taking up a peak Saturday night, you know? I'll take this gig because I've got nothing else.
Yeah.
But then you're blocking off a night you could have been getting money elsewhere, I guess.
Is it kind of like an hourly? So if someone goes, oh, Simon, can you play at my function for 2 hours? Do you kind of go, okay, in your mind, do you go, well, I charge this much for an hour, so that's going to be 2 times that? Or do you kind of work it out on what's required of the gig?
Generally by an hour. I think it's probably fine to say, if you're at within a certain kind of like level or group or something within our city, you're generally looking probably about $100 an hour.
Yep.
Give or take a little bit, you know. Yep. Probably give a little bit. Or a band gig in some of them. Depending on probably just what bars there are and how well the bar's doing or what kind of money they earn. So that's, you know, that's one way to look at bars. And then with private functions, when we're doing that, it just depended. Like, I mean, weddings can be a monumentally long day just because there's so much kind of, you're fitting around everything else.
You're usually required to set up before the ceremony.
That's
what we find. I mean, we would be different from you in that sense. We're always a standard price. It doesn't, to be honest, the playing time in between doesn't fluctuate so much. It doesn't matter. And We've a saying we've said in the band that we get paid to set up and pack down and we play for free because the playing is actually the easy part. But yeah. For us to have to, so if we've got a gig in Auckland, we're lugging all our gear up there. We've got quite a big setup. We've got lots of gear, lots of lights and stuff. So we set all of that up. That takes a lot of time. We, you know, tune the PA, do all of that stuff, and then pack it all down at the end of the night, drive all the way home. It's like, that's the hard part.
Yeah.
In between, whether we're playing for 2 or 4 hours, we actually... That's kind of easy. Like it's not, yeah. That's not the part that. So for us, it's generally a set rate. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay. So even if, especially because you guys do a lot of corporate, even if it's, do you like take into consideration what the company is and charge more for a multinational?
I guess if we'd be a little sneaky, like we have a range, and our range is probably between say $2,500 to $4,000 for the night. And $4,000 being more the high end, like when you really know that it's a good corporate and you kind of can be a bit cheeky in a way. But you also, you've got to be careful because if you go in with that, then they'll say, well, that's too much. And so not necessarily. So generally it would be a bit lower than that. But it would, we would look at the gig. Sometimes if it's a charity thing, we'd go less too because we know that they're just trying, we're not trying to rip them off. We're just trying to make a basic amount. But it kind of, any less than that, and it's kind of gets about how we've got quite a few of us involved. You know, we've got 4 of us. We usually have a lighting guy, sound guy. There's a lot. We need enough money to go around for everyone. So
yeah.
Generally we have a starting place, take into account that the, and generally for us, which is probably different from you, is it is almost a whole day affair. I mean, we will go, if we have to do setups and stuff, generally for corporate, they might say, okay, we need you to set up at 2 and be done by 4 because at 4 these guys are coming in and these guys are coming in. So that means leaving Hamilton at 1, getting home at 1. It's a 12-hour day. So
do you guys offer, like for an example, you say, yes, we'll play your gig, it is this much. Or do you go, yeah, we'll play your gig, our basic is this. If you want real fancy lighting, then it's this. If you want big subs, you know, in the sound system, it's this. And
like, yeah, so we've tried doing that. We've tried doing that, and people always not go for it because they don't understand what it adds, you know. So we'll say, we've thought about that before too. So it's like, okay, so this is like X amount, but if you want more for this stuff, people generally don't understand. They won't pay for it. They don't realize how much of a difference it makes.
Mirrorball, why would I want that?
Well, good sound. Why do we need big speakers? And so for us, it's more about, like, I think if someone could get us for a bit cheaper with half the PA, they'd be quite happy to do that. But the problem is we don't want to portray ourselves in a sound that we don't feel sounds good.
Yeah.
So for us, having to bring the extra stuff, bring in the extra lights, bring the extra sound, that has to come with us because we are trying to uphold a standard. So we want people to, anyone else who's seeing us, we don't want, and I think sometimes people underestimate, like I've seen some really good bands before, maybe more like originals type gigs where just the PA might just be supplied by the bar or something. And I've seen them like, these guys are really good, but it does not sound good because the PA is letting them down. And I think as a musician, you can hear, you can listen between the lines and know that they're good. But I think from an average person, they might go, oh, these guys aren't that good. So I think it really does affect you.
Yeah.
But the average person doesn't know that. Yeah. So for us, it just has to be compulsory to have the stuff with us. And we have had a thing like with extra people. Like we've got the girl that covered me on maternity leave. We now offer her as part of a bigger package. So it's like, it should come together. So there's 2 girls singing. So we usually just have me. But so it's like for a bigger event, oh, we have 2 girls singing, pay a little bit more and get this, you know, get this extra person. Yeah. So that's kind of a bigger package. But again, we're finding people go, well, why do I need to? They go for the cheaper option. So so we tend to kind of keep it what, it's easier to just offer the one.
So what is your basic, like what do you need? What do the Munros need to put on your basic show in terms of PA and lighting and equipment?
Oh no, now you're asking me questions I don't, that is not my area. Brad. Yeah, I have to ring Brad. So my husband's the drummer of the band and he usually, we're quite lucky in a sense that we've got him with his expertise in the band, so he takes care of most of that as well. So it's quite hard because he's often sound checking while playing the drums, which is always a little bit complicated.
Yeah.
But he's always kind of keeping up with what's going on and what's new and what he feels is at a certain level.
But, you play shows with a good PA system that's your own.
Yes, it's ours.
And you have a lighting rig that's your own.
Yes.
And you have a sound guy.
We have a sound guy always with us, and on occasion we'll have a lighting guy too. So generally our sound guy tries to do a bit of lights at the same time.
Yep.
But for bigger shows that we feel we need a bit more, we'll bring in someone else as well. So sometimes we have a team of 2, I guess, but usually just 1 person with us.
Cool.
Yeah.
And at the opposite end of the scale, what are the most what's the most basic kind of equipment that you need to put on a solo gig and then maybe a band gig? What do you think?
Well, I guess you need a PA for the band. Solo gig, man, just a guitar.
Yeah.
You know, campfire styles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that really suits, you know.
And to be honest, it's happened before. We had to do that almost at a wedding once because I can't remember, there was issues with something.
Mm.
And like once we explained the issues to them, they were fine. But I think, you know, like we kind of like that kind of thing where you sit on the beach, like someone's got a guitar and you'll have a sing-along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's the minimum.
It's a guitar.
It can be done, man, for sure.
Yeah.
Or being able to work to a point where you've got good gear is quite important. I'll never do a gig half-assed because I'd feel bad in my own conscience because I'm getting paid for it. It doesn't matter to me, like, regardless of what the gig is, if there's four people there, if there's lots, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm always trying to better myself.
You're
anyway.
Upholding a standard.
Yeah, totally. Like this, yeah. And I think
because you know what you can deliver too. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
This
yeah.
is what I am. Yeah.
And I think quite often, there's quite musicians like anyone can get quite competitive. I might have been when I was younger. Maybe it's like a young thing. You know, you're trying to kind of prove yourself or whatever. But yeah. I think once I discovered that it sort of didn't matter. I kind of just went, well, I just need to be as good as me.
Mm.
Because I'm the only one who can do what I do as well as I can do.
Yeah.
And they're the only one who can do what they do. And there's no point me trying to do a bad version of them.
Yeah.
And I think once you work that out, and that goes for any type of music, I think.
There's room for everyone, eh?
Yeah, like everyone. Totally. It didn't, you know, it kind of became illogical to worry about it. I just went, well, if they don't think I'm good, that's fine. I'm just trying to be as good as I can be every gig.
Mm.
It doesn't matter. And if I don't, I'll always get to the end of the gig and always be like, oh, man. You know, I should have...
Didn't give it all.
That. But yeah, and it doesn't... Yeah, like, it's totally regardless of how many or how few people are there.
Mm.
I've always approached it, you know, like that. And I think that says a lot and does a lot for clients or venues. I think when they see that, because everyone can look good if a bar's really kicking and there's a big crowd and it's going off really well, you're obviously made to look good, you know, because it's going well.
Mm.
I think what says a lot is if you're still giving it that much when there's not as many people there.
Yeah. Mm.
I think that's a really important thing to try and uphold that.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, like...
To be just as good when you're not getting that natural energy that you get from a roaring, successful crowd.
Yeah,
to still give that same show.
Hard. It's really hard.
It's really
that.
Hard, yeah. Oh, it man. Is, it's oh. hard. Yeah, when people aren't that into it, still delivering at that top level.
Yeah. yeah.
But as you said before, a lot of the time the people that you're delivering to are the people that are giving you your next gig.
Yeah, exactly. And you never know who's watching. Yeah. You know?
Well, that's it. Like one of the gigs I got... I think it was in one of the islands. I was playing to like six people on like like a Tuesday night or something. You know,
yeah.
would have been 10 people with maybe with the bar staff.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was no one there.
Yeah.
And then they said, "Oh, we've got our wedding
cool.
in Vanuatu.
Yeah.
Can you play?"
Like, awesome.
And I was kind of like, and, but it was a complete case in point. Like it's so true. Like, and the amount of times where you're playing to only a very small amount of people, and then someone ends up being, you know, whoever who wants you to do whatever, is quite unreal sometimes. And you're kind of going, man, if I'd just been fluffing around.
Mm.
Yeah, it wouldn't have got that.
No chance, you know. Yeah.
Okay, I want to share a bit. When I stopped doing covers, I was still quite young, and I think a lot of this attitude comes with age.
Mm.
But I would find that whenever there was a bad gig, or there was five people there and I was playing to them, you know, I would kind of drop.
Feel deflated. Yeah.
And I would sort of start to think, why am I here? Why am I doing this? You know, I hate this song.
Yeah, I've played it so many times.
Your mind starts to wander and your body just keeps playing.
Yeah.
And you start to think.
You go autopilot.
And you kind of go, why am I doing this? Mm. And I think a lot of people, especially starting out, deciding on whether they're going to pursue covers or not, they kind of see that as a problem. So how do you guys kind of overcome playing those same songs and how do you keep that positivity in it?
I think for me, like, playing this, I guess, yeah, I do. I play the same songs. Man, I've sung I Will Survive so many times. Like, yeah. It's ridiculous. But I don't.
But you have indeed survived.
But I survived. I don't think about what I'm singing. It's not about the singing in that sense. It's about the experience that I'm having. And it's always different in that sense. It's always different faces, different people receiving, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess that keeps me going. If I was just sit there thinking, because the worst for me is band practices. I'm just like, because then you're just sitting thinking about it. It's like, then you're singing the songs. It's like, wow, that's really the same thing over and over. But when you're on stage, it doesn't feel, I don't even think about it. It's like, oh God, not this song again. Because I'm enjoying people's reaction. The only time I would, if we play a song that maybe doesn't go well, like for whatever reason, like then that's hard. Then I'm like, oh gosh, this is really hard. But for me, I don't care how much I hate the song. If they like it, I like it. Do you know what I mean? Like if they're responding, then I'll play that song because they love it. So I don't care that it's the song that I'm over, you know? Yeah. I don't even have an opinion about the songs we play. I certainly wouldn't go home and like listen to it. That's not like in my jam, you know. But when I'm on stage, it doesn't matter about what we like. It's kind of about what the audience likes.
That's the other, as well as being the connection point, I think. That's my other equal top one before music.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like the bottom line is if someone's paying you to play, you know, what people like, that's your job. Like when I was, whatever other job I've had.
That was
my job. I didn't kind of go, oh man, I'm over this. I think I might go and do something else today. Didn't work like that.
You're getting the money to do that.
Totally. And
man, would you be rather getting the money to play guitar and sing or 100%, getting money to work wherever?
Totally. Exactly. That is.
I know what I'd rather do. I've played in originals bands since I was 13. And many, 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 many of my best gigs have been covers gigs. And many of the best parts of the gigs that I've played with my originals bands have been when we're playing a cover. Because everyone knows the song, and you can see as soon as you start playing the first, you know, the intro to the song, you can see the whole room go, oh, I know this one. And then they get involved and they start to sing, and
people love what they know.
I mean, you know, it's something to be said about that.
And that's why for me, I get so much joy out of performing covers. I've never really done the originals thing, and it's not, it's kind of not really where my passion lies, I guess, because I've done the covers thing for so long, and I do find that, I get so much joy out of it, man. I wouldn't have my life any other way. I can't believe how lucky I am to be making music out of something I enjoy so much, you know, and getting such rapport, and the fact that I'm singing someone else's songs, it doesn't bother me in that sense. Like I'm just enjoying the relationships that I'm making and the interaction, and I enjoy entertaining and performing, and covers has given me the opportunity to do that. I never would have had the opportunity to do that doing original stuff, you know. Some people would, I think, for some people, they know they're really strong songwriters and it's something they should pursue, like Simon probably, you know, you feel you've got probably more of an angle in that sense, whereas I realize where my strengths are, and my strength as a performer, entertainer.
So for you, is covers a means to an end to get the cash, or do you see it as your career?
Both. I see it as my career, definitely, and but I see it as money too. Like, I mean, I enjoy gigging, but I'm not going to go do it for free either. Do you know what I mean? Like, I enjoy it, but I also enjoy, I need the money from it. It needs to be a career as well. I need to make money from it. But it's not something I'm like, oh God, I've got to, you know, I've got gigs and this is just, you know, oh well, think of the money, think of the money. It's not like that. Like, it's really something I do enjoy as well, you know, and something like, yeah, I consider myself a professional musician and this is my, people say what you do, that's what I do, you know, I'm a singer. It's kind of weird, but that's what I do.
How many people get to say that?
Yeah.
That's, oh, it's kind of weird when you're writing it on the plane.
Oh, I know, I knew, yeah, I hate writing it.
And you just kind of feel like a bit of, I always feel like a bit of a wanker, musician.
Yeah, I know. When we go overseas with the band, we all had to fill out our forms, and none of the others put musician on theirs.
Really?
And I put musician on mine, and they're like, Nicholas, because it's embarrassing.
No, it's not.
Well, because people are like, musician. You kind of sound like a try-hard in a way. Like, it's just like musician.
That's just Kiwis.
So the others put like their other things, you know, like our manager or whatever. They try to be a little bit more normal. You know, pick a normal role. Because my husband, he works as a manager as well, so he would rather say technical manager on his, you know, and like later he's a promoter, so he'll put promoter on his, and we they kind of put their other roles, you know. So I'm either a musician or a stay-at-home mom.
I could just
so
start
here writing good for me.
Father,
yeah,
father, house, yeah, exactly. Cleaner.
So, what about you? Is this the means to an end, or is it your long-term career?
Yeah, oh, that's a hard one to kind of answer, I guess. Because I guess I've always approached it slightly as a bit of a means to an end because I wanted to try and push the original music and stuff.
So it's a bit of a channel for you in a way.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. So I think, but not sort of in a derogatory term, what I say, it means to an end, if you know what I mean. It wasn't.
Yep.
It's something I kind of picked and it was very deliberate and I enjoy it.
Mm. That's what I was going to say. Do you enjoy it? Like, would you would you prefer a different job or is it you enjoy it?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty fortunate because by whatever, you know, for whatever reason, I really like the bands that I generally have to play.
Mm-hmm.
Like if someone wants me to play Creedence for an hour.
You're like, great.
I'm like stoked. Like, yeah, I'm like, all right, man, here we go.
Yeah,
this is going to be wicked.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, like I'm pretty, probably quite fortunate in that sense. That those were just the bands I grew up listening to. So I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So having to play those songs is just fun to me because, you know, I like those bands.
Do what you love.
Mm. Yeah, totally. And so I think in that way, like I'm a little bit, there's much, you know, like you couldn't really plan that. That's just a bit of luck, really. But, you know, like I guess when I first started, and the music industry has changed and is changing so quickly and has changed so much, you know, in nearly 10 years, you know, I sort of saw it as a means to try and find an audience.
Mm.
Generally, because I guess my music is in a similar vein to those bands, you know, so I sort of figured if that's what those people like in bars, then they'll possibly like my music too. And, you know, and it has actually kind of worked out that way to a point, which is cool. But, you know, nowadays, how many people are making a full living off their original music anyway? So you start
even
kind of looking.
Even pretty successful bands, eh?
Totally. Yeah. So you start looking and you start having to kind of reevaluate it going, well, man, all the musicians I know trying to push their original music, pretty much everyone's got a little sinning.
Oh, everyone's got a job.
On the side, you know, because there's just not enough money.
No.
So you kind of go, you know, you sort of go, well, this is mine. There's no point in changing it now because I enjoy it.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, fortunately through those years, I managed to get to a point where people wanted me to play at their venues. So,
man, I mean, just talking to you guys, what it boils down to, you know, is you're actually doing it for a living, and that's probably what a lot of listeners, you know, are thinking about.
Mm.
That you guys are actually making music as your living, which is rare. It's really quite rare.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
It is, you know. But covers is such a great way to do that, and there's so many benefits.
And that's the podcast for this week. Thank you so much to my guests Nicola Thompson and Simon Hurst, and thank you for listening and or watching if you're getting this on YouTube. The artist of the week this week is my guest Simon Hurst, whose latest EP, The Cat's Out of the Bag, is available now on iTunes and Spotify. Check him out at simonhurst.co.nz or simonhurst.bandcamp.com, or check the text associated with this podcast for links to his music. To hear more of Nicola and her band, The Monroes, and to get in touch for bookings, check out themonroes.co.nz. Monroes is M-O-N-R-O-E-S. The Musicians Map podcast is part of the Musicians Map website, musiciansmap.org, where you can find lots more articles and videos, as well as my ebook and audiobook about growing success in music. In that book, you'll find experienced-based advice about every aspect of learning music, from listening and learning an instrument, to recording, gigging, touring, and making money as a musician. For those of you wanting to get serious about your musical journey, I offer one-on-one development sessions and song critiques, which are honestly an incredible way to gain the focus and direction required to achieve your goals, whatever they might be. I've also got a free 5-step challenge to a clear musical pathway. Sign up now on the Musicians Map website and learn how to find your voice, refine your focus, and follow your true calling. This is essential advice for new and aspiring musicians, and it's totally free. So once again, head to musiciansmap.org to take advantage of all the resources on offer. Also, please get in touch with your comments, suggestions, and let me know what challenges you are facing at the moment over at the Musicians Map Facebook group. I always respond. Stay positive.